Shall we jump in?
Yes.
Okay. Welcome to Curmudgeon's Corner for Saturday, October 4th, 2025. It's just a couple minutes before 14:30 UTC as we're starting to record. I'm Sam Minter, Yvonne Bose here. Hello, Yvonne.
Hi.
You sound enthused as usual.
I am worse, and I'll explain why. Well, I need surgery.
Yes.
And this week, the pain that I've been experiencing has gotten markedly worse.
That's not good.
No, it's not good. I probably did it to myself. In order to find a doctor who could figure out very quickly what the hell my problem was, because I got a little bit frustrated with the doctors I'd been seeing here. Well, my brother. My sister-in-law is a doctor, and her office is right by another doctor's office who pretty much was the right person to see for what my problem was. And so last Friday, you know, I called my brother who works at the same hospital. He's a pharmacist, not a doctor, but, you know, he knows his stuff as well. I said, you know, I got this going on. What do I do? And he said, hang on. And he, aside from being a pharmacist, his most of his time is spent managing the office at my sister-in-law's doctor's office. And anybody who's been a doctor now, with all the paperwork and insurance and shit and whatever that goes on, you need somebody that can do that. And so he's the guy that does that for their practice. So he walked over there and called me back. Well, they can see you on Monday.
Right.
And I'm like, okay. So this is in Texas. So I had to fly to Texas on Sunday to go get looked at. And the doctor, after doing the physical examination, was able to figure out that, you don't have a muscle strain. You don't have diverticulitis. What you have is a hernia. I'm now realizing that this had been there for a while. I had some minor discomfort in the past that I had put off as soreness.
You'd blown it off.
Well, I thought I was just sore.
Right.
You know, I thought it was just something temporary. You know, I work out a lot. And so I just thought, no, you know, muscles get sore and you get some pain. That must be just it. And it went and it came and it went away. So it didn't stay there permanently. But since July, it started permanently. Okay, it didn't go. That's how I wound up to the doctor, because I started getting pain and it started not going away. But look, I had to fly to Texas and back for that. I went on Sunday. I came back Monday night. And, you know, my brother doesn't live in Dallas or Houston where there's a direct flight. I had to change planes to get where they live. So it was basically 6 hours going there, 6 hours going back. I mean, I got home on Monday, like at 2:30 in the morning. And then, I also had to go to Guyana. Now, look, I have to say, I always looked at the map and I thought Guyana was closer because I knew it was right, right by Venezuela. And okay, I've been to Caracas before, and it's like, it's less than 3 hours. Well, no, Guyana is really much further out. Another thing is, I mistakenly thought it was on the Caribbean Sea. It is past Trinidad. It is on the Atlantic coast. Mm-hmm. So it is that much further out. It's closer to 5 hours to get there. Okay?
Okay, yes.
And I had to go on a Wednesday night, 5 hours there, and then came back yesterday, 5 hours back. While I was there, the pain started getting worse because I spent 10 hours on a fucking airplane round trip. Plus, let me just say this. Look, Guyana right now is experiencing a huge growth spurt.
Okay.
Guyana for many, many decades was even poorer than Haiti. Okay. In the Americas, it was the poorest country in the Americas for an extended period of time. But the Venezuela's stupidity has been Guyana's gain, because what happened is, as Venezuela destroyed their oil production and economy, you know, some guys at ExxonMobil figured out, you know what? They're bordering Venezuela, right? There's got to be oil there. And lo and behold, in 2015, they found it. And they found a huge amount of it. And so their economy right now is booming. Listen, you know, I started doing my research as I go over there and I'm meeting with a customer. You know, do you realize that right now Guyana has like it almost like the highest GDP per person in the Americas right now?
I had no such realization.
Neither did I. It's like shit like that that all of a sudden I realize, holy shit. I mean, they are basically, money is flooding in there. And the economy is the fastest growing right now in the Americas. Like, literally, like, it's been growing in recent years. Of course, it started from such a low base that so makes it happen. But it's been growing like 50% a year. Shit, you know, crazy numbers like this. Okay. Mm. And so, but,
yes.
Look, listen, being that they were the poorest state, it doesn't, their infrastructure is still, you know, that of the shows that they are still, you know, one of the poorest. The airport is right now, it takes an hour to go from the international airport to downtown, to the city. Okay. It's an hour drive.
Okay.
The road is about the worst road that I've had to traverse over a long distance. I'm not saying it is the worst, but it matches the worst. Well, after you've been on a five-hour ride, you got to take a one-hour ride in a very bumpy road in a car that is more made to be resistant to the getting damaged rather than for passenger comfort, mm-hmm. back and forth. That didn't help
in a body either. That's already sore,
in a body that's already having problems. That was not helpful. Okay. Right. I will say this one thing. The people in Guyana, everybody that I met with was incredibly pleasant and lovely.
Okay,
and I will take any of them over most of the MAGA idiots that we have here. I will ship them. I don't know. I will quickly trade for them in a heartbeat.
Right.
Okay. No questions asked. You know, by the way, one also interesting tidbit. They are fanatics for KFC. Listen.
For KFC.
KFC. Okay. Look, it's Sam. I'm talking insanity fanatics. I went and I drove through past a couple of KFCs and they had drive-thrus.
So you had
the country. No, I did not. No, I passed by the drive. No. I just saw the drive-thrus. Look, I wasn't there long enough. I mean, I think I only went.
Because I was going to ask for the comparison between their KFC and our KFC.
No, here's what they told me. The guy told me that. Now, remember another thing, another interesting tidbit about Guyana. Things that I found. But look, I hadn't visited the country before. So I started reading up. I wanted to know about the culture, economy. You know, I don't like going to a place without.
You don't want to go in cold.
No. I want to find out everything I can about, you know, what's happened and so forth and so on. And I hadn't really dug into it a lot. Largest population is of Indian descent. Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. The second is African slaves.
Just to be clear, indigenous Americans, not like.
No, India.
Oh, India. Okay.
India.
Largest population overall.
Yes.
Like greater than
than everything else. Yes.
Wow. Okay.
And I'll explain why. Okay. This is what happened. Okay. You know, so it's people from India. Okay. That moved there. Okay. Africa, you know, you know, descendants of African slaves. And the last one are the indigenous. Okay. That's the smallest set. Okay. So what happened is that when
I'm confirming this, and absolutely, it's like 40% Indian, 29% African, 20% mixed, 11% indigenous, and then trivial portions of European and Chinese.
Yes. And so here's how this happened. Okay. Okay. First, you know, there's gold and other, you know, valuable things in Guyana. Okay. It was a British colony. They abolished slavery, right? So what did the British at the time decide to solve? How did they decide to solve the problem? Indentured servitude. Okay.
Yeah.
They brought in Indians that they put on indentured servitude contracts that wanted to get out of India, put them on a contract, shipped them to Guyana, and that's how they were replacing the slave labor.
Okay, then.
And that's how, and by the way, that is why I had been to a few ex-British colonies, like Jamaica. I can't remember which other island I went to. I think it was maybe in the Caymans, I experiences, where I met a lot of people Indian descent. And I was like, why the Indians? And this is the reason the British in the 1800s decided to, when they abolished slavery, that they replaced it with indentured servitude. And many brought many Indians because India was a colony and many wanted to leave.
Of course, yeah.
And it was like, because the indentured servitude, the one thing about it is they were like, hey, it ends. Because the contracts had a fixed definition of time. It wasn't like forever.
It wasn't like slavery where your kids are going to get sold as well. Yeah.
No, it was like it was a period of time. And then after the period of time and then you whatever. And so a lot of them took the deal.
Just to be clear, generally speaking, those contracts were set up in such a way that they kind of trapped you anyway.
Oh, yeah. Yes. It was
it was very hard to actually get out of those under the theoretical terms.
Because they would add debt to it and then you owed more. And so then it would pile on. So it would add more time. Yeah. But the vision was like, hey, the contract ended. And in many cases, even though they trapped them, eventually they ended and it didn't carry on to the next generation and so forth. So that's the thing, which is why, you know, also it's like number one sport is cricket.
Okay,
it's also another thing, but the guy that I was speaking to who took me around, who's also of Indian descent, explained to me that the thing about the KFC, he believes that basically they take whatever the herbs and spices they send and they basically double them up. So that's the flavor. That's the KFC local. Basically, it is, you know, the same, except if you remember herbs and spices, it's doubled up on the herbs and spices. Okay. And the Sam, the drive through, the car lines, there were like 15, 20 cars long, 25. They would wrap around the block. Okay, it was like it was worse than any lines that I've seen at Chick-fil-A, which I don't see them like having those lines anymore. Yeah. I realize they're not as, you know, but yeah, it was like kind of like that. It was crazy. So I saw that. So that was like the one thing that stood out.
Now you got me wanting some KFC.
I know KFC is good, but we both said, yeah, but I'm like, you know, I haven't eaten it in a while because I'm like, you know, we're trying to, you know, it's just, but. Oh, I like it. So anyway, it was just quite interesting, but it's also, I mean, you can see obviously how the poverty it's starting to like be covered up to some way, but man, I mean, you could see how,
but it's still there.
Yeah.
Because generally speaking, when you have sort of the kind of rapid growth you're talking about, it is not evenly distributed.
It isn't, but it is being distributed. I will say that you can tell that's why so many people are like, one thing they were talking about was that right now, a country that had very few cars, that right now they're basically registering about 3,000 new cars a month. Mm-hmm. And this is so even they're extremely taxed as well. And they are building a new highway to the airport. Okay. All right. That is not finished yet. They did build this new airport, which is, It's got to be one of the smallest airports I've been to outside of being in a one of these Caribbean island airports, okay? Mm-hmm. It is one of the smallest international airports that I've ever been to. It's pretty new and shiny. It's a little bit of a wonky design, but hey, it's nice and clean. It's got food, it's got gates, it's air conditioned, it's, you know, I mean, you know, it looks decent. The design is a little bit weird because the gates don't actually have the waiting areas there. There is like this general, and actually the signage, if they put, now that I know the drill, I know how to maneuver it, but they didn't have signs there that explain this. There's this general waiting area that is on the first floor. And then when your flight gets called, you go up to a second level and you walk over to the gate and then you go in. But there isn't a waiting area at the gate itself.
Ah, right. Okay.
So that was a little bit like confusing at first because the only thing that was missing was really the signage to make it clear. But it was, you know, it was nice, clean. Good. The security was better than a lot of other airports I've seen. I'll tell you what, they had good equipment and things and stuff and whatever. And the hotel was new and shiny. And another very interesting thing. They asked me, what about the beaches? And I'm like, well, no beaches.
Okay.
And the reason is it's not at first. I looked at the water and I'm like, is that mud or is it pollution? And I'm like, I've been to places that have rivers and waters that are very polluted. And it's a lot of times very obvious from the smell. You know, it's just, you know, like in Brazil specifically, I remember that, you know, you'd get to these polluted waterways and the stench from the water was just, awful. That's the one that I remember most specifically. But that's not it at all. It's not pollution either. What happens is that they get runoff from major rivers going there, including the Amazon. Mm-hmm. And that runoff actually is carrying quite a lot of mud, it's just, but a lot of mud because these are very powerful rivers that are sending there. So all the water, like literally when you go and look at it, looks like mud. And if you went and it is the muddiest coast in the world is that I figured because I looked at it and I'm like, is that mud? And so I had to look at it. That looks like mud. That was my thought. And I looked it up that Guyana has the muddiest water coast anywhere. Basically, if you went into the water like, yo, let me go to the beach, let me take a dip, you'd come out and you're like basically caked in mud. Not exactly really the best beach going experience.
At least a different experience.
It would be quite a different one. It's not like you're going to come out polluted. It's just you're going to be covered in mud. I mean, I know some people that like being covered in mud. I've seen this. Okay, you know, but mud fights or whatever. I'm not one that likes to go get covered in mud.
It's never appealed to me either.
I saw these people like at camp, like going to get into mud fights and in the mud that I'm like, no, thank you.
Yeah. Okay. No.
I'm out. Thank you.
Okay. So,
yes, all of this travel and getting to know, I will say quite a cool experience. Okay. All right. I don't know. I didn't look into, is there any way to like get some proper tourism? Like to get to know like the country. I didn't get time to research to go into research it. But what I will say is that despite the fact that, you know, poor whatever, there's not a lot of hotels. I mean, the hotel that I stayed at was a nice hotel, but it's not like a 5-star hotel, but the rate was for a 5-star hotel. It was like $500 a night.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, geez, okay. So, man, the people are so lovely. I really had a great time. That really was, you know, that was the positive of my experience. You know, it's just quite a lovely group of people. I really liked, you know, being there. So
now before I do my butt first segment, and once again, I've forgotten the agenda at the beginning of the show. We're doing our butt first where we sort of talk about personal stuff, movies, whatever. And then we'll get into the news in the next segment.
Oh, I am scheduled for surgery on November 5th.
That's what I was going to ask is what's your date? So you got a while yet. That's like a month away.
I have a while.
And it's getting worse. So that's not a good combination.
Well, the one thing is, I think I made it worse this week. I'm going to go on a rest.
That seems like a good idea.
You know, I'm going to give it my, I'm going to rest. I will say that it's a good, another good thing is that I got a new chair for my office.
Mm-hmm.
And I will say that I've noticed that sitting
in
the Aeron chair makes a big difference where when I'm sitting here, I'm actually not experiencing pain at all.
Okay.
So that's a big plus, apparently, about getting the new chair. So probably being at home and not sitting on some random thing and sitting on an airplane for, you know, 10 hours. I literally sat over 20 hours on a plane this week. Probably not the best, smartest thing.
I had many
other choices. Look, I planned this meeting with these guys. I'd been working on this. It had been for months. It was months and months. I started talking directly to them. I'd been sending trading messages or whatever, but really, really nitty gritty in March. Okay. And we had set up for our first in-person meeting now and a bit very close to getting, you know, this deal completed. And I met with their CIO and their CEO. And I'm like, I can't blow this damn meeting off.
Right.
After it's been set up for so long, I gotta suck it up and do this. So, you know, I did. I know that I've paid, but I'm like, it was worth it in the sense of it was a great meeting with them. It was nice to see the country. You know, you know, the only thing we ever hear about Guyana is like Jim Jones. I mean, everybody.
Yeah, I made a Kool-Aid joke as soon as I made a Kool-Aid joke as soon as Ivan.
Exactly. You say that name, and that's the first thing that comes to anybody's mind. And I'm really glad to be able now to not have that as my first thought when we talk about the country of Guyana. And I'm very happy about that.
Okay. So I'll do my stuff real quick. So first of all, I am going to do movies, and I'm not going to let this be the whole thing, but I'm also traveling. Anybody who's watching our video live stream will notice I have a different background.
Your background looks very, 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 very different. Definitely doesn't look like your house.
I'm at an Airbnb in Toronto. I'm visiting my sister. I have a nephew who is now 6 months old that I'm visiting for the first time. So that's very nice. Get to hold the baby and like play with it a little. It's old enough. So it like is a, you know, it's interactive a little bit. It's not just sleeping all the time and crying. You know, it does a little bit of stuff, but it's not yet a toddler. So we're still in that middle zone, but,
You can hold it. You can hold the baby.
You can hold the baby. You can sort of bounce it. You can like,
it's
like looking at you. It's old enough. It's like laughing and stuff.
Yes.
You know,
yes. It's a great time. Yes.
So, having a lot of fun, also getting to chat with my sister and have a couple conversations with her husband for really the first time. I met him like for 5 minutes at the wedding, you know, but otherwise have not had a time to like sit down and really chat with him or anything. So I've done that a little bit. So it's a lot of fun. And I was traveling. I was a little bit, you know, I don't travel that often. And we also had this government shutdown going on. So I was worried, like, am I going to have, like, massive TSA delays? Am I going to have, you know, issues with customs, whatever? And I'll just say that there was a delay. The plane itself was delayed more than 4 hours. But it was a mechanical issue.
What airline did you fly? Alaska, Air Canada?
This way was Air Canada. I'm going back on Alaska. But, you know, there was a mechanical issue. The plane that was... It was just going back and forth between Toronto and Seattle, right? So it hadn't left Toronto yet because there was some sort of mechanical issue. Turns out they switched out the plane because they'd already like boarded people onto the plane and they were taxiing and they had to bring them back to the gate and pull them all off and find another plane and all that kind of stuff. And so it was like 4 hours late for that, but like, you know, going through security in Seattle was incredibly quick. It was just minutes. Like I got through the whole thing. Like, you know, We have that clear thing, but I was like, I didn't even bother to try to figure it out because the line was going so fast and everything. And I haven't been through U.S. customs heading back yet. That'll be when I head back. And they're the ones who are being assholes right now. But like,
well, make sure that you, and this is advice for anybody, that if you don't have a global entry, okay, there's the mobile passport control app, okay, that what you do is once you land, it lets you like do the punch in the information so that way they scan with the code. It expedites that process.
Okay. So like U.S. has one of those too. I did one of those for Canada.
But yeah, like U.S. has one. Yes.
But all I was going to say is like Canadian customs took like 10 seconds.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I did that little app. And then, you know, you had to go to a kiosk and confirm that what you'd done on the app was correct. And I was like, yes. And I suppose if you hadn't done it on the app, you could do the whole thing at the kiosk. But like I'd done it on the app. So you go up to the little guy and, you know, the last time I went to Canada, when I went up to the little guy, they asked me some questions, not a lot of questions, but they asked me like, you know, 30 seconds worth of why are you here? What are you about? This time it was like, okay, good. Have a nice time. No questions at all. Just waved me through.
Well, I will say, I have global entry. So right now, basically the process is I walk up to a kiosk, it scans my face. I don't even pull out my passport. And then I walk past a person who confirms that they have a picture of me and they call my name and I go. So that's pretty much it. That's all it involves. Not even filling out a form. Going to Guyana, so usually when I go to a country that I haven't been to, I try to look up whether there's anything to fill out for entry. Okay. For some reason on the American Airlines app, it didn't show that there was a entry form. In some countries I've been to, either you get a paper form when you get there or something. Most of them have them electronic like right now.
Yeah, yeah.
But I try to look up, hey, is there any form to fill out? It didn't say anything on the app. When I get there, I go and they have these automated kiosks that are now, Dominican Republic has these for departure control, where you put your passport, it scans it. And what it does, it looks up to see if you filled out your form, confirms. And whatever.
So I didn't want to get into all this detail. My only point on this
But here's the thing: what happened when I got there?
Okay.
It didn't say anything about any form. And I've been to countries where right now they're not requiring forms. I wound up getting over there, put my passport on the thing. It's rejecting me. Well, you got to fill out the form. I'm like, oh, I have no form. So I had to go try to fill it out. And by the way, the CAPTCHA on this form, I don't know what the hell. The worst CAPTCHA in history. I literally had to type it, I think for entry and exit, I kept typing it like, I did it more than 10 times. It kept regressing my CAPTCHA. Do you realize how annoying, and all the capital letter or small letter, I hate these things.
Okay, fine. Can I move on now?
You can move on.
My entire point was just like, I was worried because of the governmental shutdown, there would be delays. There were none for me.
No.
There were none. Everything was smooth and rapid and, you know, aside from the mechanical delay on the plane, which cost me 4 hours. But luckily, I got the notification of that before I left home.
Mm-hmm.
So like, you know, I wasn't stuck at the airport.
Yeah, you weren't stuck
that
at the airport.
Time.
That's good. Yeah, that's always good. You know, when I get the notification that my flight's been canceled and I haven't made it to the airport, I'm like, oh, good.
Yeah.
And
like, you know, and honestly, I needed the extra time to get ready. Like I was hurrying to try to rush and get out the door. I got the notification that it was delayed 1 hour, and then later they delayed it another 3 hours. And so as soon as I got it's delayed 1 hour, I went from like rushing to get everything ready to, I'm going to take my time. I'm just going to relax. I'll do this slowly. I'm not going to worry about it. And then, anyway, so I ended up getting to the airport minutes before my original flight would have left. Yeah. You know?
Okay.
Yeah. You know, so but my behavior had changed. Like if my flight was
you weren't stressed out in a rush.
Yeah. Like if it was leaving at the time it was supposed to leave, I would have gotten out the door a lot quicker. You know, I just took my time. Anyway, no more travel adventures. We've had enough travel adventures. So, you know, I could go blow by blow with more travel stuff, including some interesting stories. But I will skip that because instead, you know, it's been a couple weeks since I did movies. So I'm going to do at least one. At least one, damn it.
All right, we need to do a movie. Okay.
Okay. The movie Dark Days from the year 2000. This is not one that anybody is likely to have really heard of, probably.
Okay, good. Yeah, I'm like, what the hell? I don't know what the hell this is. Okay,
it is a, because it is a documentary that, and documentaries are often, you know, big box office blockbusters, right? You know,
yes,
like people
yes,
are
the biggest,
just running
I mean,
to the
number one movie, number one movies of all time. I think top five, like grossing, is all documentaries.
Yes, exactly. So, no, this was a small little movie. It was about homeless people in Manhattan, you know, and so specifically, it was released in 2000, but it was shot in the mid 1990s. It was a lot of the people who sort of, specifically, it was focusing on people who were living in old Amtrak tunnels that were not, some of them were not in active use, others, you know, the tunnel's in use, but there's places off to the side where there's room, you know, it's not like every single space is taken up by the train. And so it follows basically a community of homeless people there, and sort of they built themselves like make two shelters and little houses like within the tunnels where they lived. There were, you know, people who, you know, there were some that lived by themselves in their little things. There were people who lived as roommates. They had populated their little shelters with, you know, furniture and appliances and things that they'd like scavenged from elsewhere. And it follows their story up through the point where, you know, Amtrak basically kicks them all out because they're going to start using the tunnel again or whatever. And, you know, and obviously these people have various levels of issues. There's drug addiction issues, there are mental health issues, there are other things going on. Yeah, you know, some of them are more sympathetic than others, but you get to know them as like, you know, look, these are human beings. You know, they're down on their luck for various reasons. They've got various issues they're working through, but they have lives. They talk about their families a little bit. They talk about how they got down there. Some of them talk about how, yes, they had opportunities to go elsewhere, but they chose to be there, and here's why. And, you know, and you feel for these people when, like, you know, their living space gets destroyed and things like that. So, you know, it's, I'll give it a thumbs up. I mean, obviously, this is not, you know, your sort of,
it's not a comedy?
It is not a comedy.
Oh, my God. You got to be kidding me. So you weren't laughing your ass off through this entire movie.
I wasn't laughing my ass off.
So you're not like, you know, so you're not like some MAGA head that would have been just watching this and watching these people suffer and going, ah, look at those losers.
No. Yeah, exactly. I mean, look, it's also not, you know,
Sam, the problem is they're not, yes, they don't have bootstraps, Sam.
Yeah, they're not picking themselves up by their bootstraps.
They don't have bootstraps. And it's this whole thing where we've moved away from boots. And yeah, so people don't have bootstraps anymore, Sam. I'm telling you.
That's right. You just can't do the same thing with sneakers.
No.
But I was going to say, it's also not the type, like there's some documentaries that are narrator heavy, where the narrator talks you through the story. If there was a narrator here, I barely even remember them. It was, you know, basically there, I think there was an interviewer, but even the interviewer, you didn't hear very much. You basically heard these people speaking in their own voices about their own lives, you know? And so it was powerful in that way. It apparently did win a few awards, won a Sundance Award for, you know, cinematography, documentary, et cetera. Won South by Southwest Film Award as well. A few others. Anyway, thumbs up. I liked it. You know, if you're in the mood for a more serious documentary, I mean, it was 1990s that it was filmed. So this isn't current per se. I mean, it's a long time ago now, right? You know, but it was still good. And I think most of the problems that they're highlighting probably have not changed all that much, you know, in the subsequent 20 years.
Hell, some right now, especially under this administration, has gotten worse.
Yeah, I mean, these are not problems we have solved.
No. No, we got, you know, we have so many places right now, especially in, I mean, even in Democratic states, we're trying to make homelessness, like, illegal.
Well, I mean, this is one of the fundamental problems, is that in a lot of policy making to deal with homelessness, they're not really dealing with homelessness. They're trying to make it so that, quote unquote, regular people don't see it.
Yeah.
You know, they want to make it less visible. They don't want to actually solve the problem. Because so their policies are dealing with, like, oh, let's go every few weeks, let's clean up the homeless encampments or whatever.
And not actually addressing, hey, guys, why are you homeless? How can we help you to try to get you out of homelessness? Okay. And look, in some cases, by the way, it's not like there are many cases where you could provide help. But also, by the way, there's a lot of people that are actually voluntarily homeless as well. They're trying to live off the grid. They don't want to be.
Although very often that is tied with mental illness as well. So they're.
Yes, but
not
but,
always.
Yeah,
but
the thing is, it is, but the problem is, again, it used to be in the old days. What did we do with people that we considered mentally ill? Exactly. And so that it's one of those things where if there's
a fundamental thing that back
it gets going, very
going back to the 80s, I think it was during the Reagan administration, where they sort of decided, you know, we're going to move away from this institutionalization approach, and we're going to let people out. But the problem is they didn't replace it with anything to like actually help these people.
Right.
You know, so, and I generally agree, like, there's a place for inpatient care for the mentally ill, but there's, if you're not, but it was overused. It was massively
overused. No, in many cases it was involuntary, which is also the problem, because
The way that institutionalization worked, there were many people locked up that shouldn't have been, that could have been living good lives on the outside with the proper care.
Right.
And the problem is that didn't exist. And, you know, like you said, it was sort of hide people away as well. You didn't want them visible. But then when they moved away from that, there was nothing there to replace it. There was nothing there to serve those people. And so you ended up with lots of people on the street, and you add economic stress, you add drug issues, you add all this. But yeah, it seems trivially like duh, that for all of these sorts of problems, the real way to deal with them is to find the root causes and deal with the root causes, not to try to deal with the symptoms. But a significant portion of our political world just doesn't like the idea of preventative stuff, of dealing with root causes, we don't want to give people help that don't deserve it, you know, all this kind of stuff. Whereas in a number of places, like, it, compared to other countries, compared to places where there have been limited scale testing, you know, the best solution to homelessness is give people homes.
Get out of town.
You know?
No.
Come
on. That can't be right.
And you start with that, with no conditions, and then you deal with, like, oh, let's help their drug issues, let's help their mental health.
But
in the meantime, you give them some place to live.
Wait,
and
really?
And not just like some packed shelter with like a million people, but you give them private place they have.
Wait, you give the homeless a place to live? What kind of fucking psychopathic communist are you? You bastard.
But the thing
is, we're going to have you to have to send you to one of these new like MAGA re-education camps.
Well, but the thing is, with all of this, it's also you can't just give them a place to stay either. You have to also back it up with the other supports that they need to in order to make that successful. And then yes, there are underlying problems with the cost of housing
healthcare?
And all kinds of other
healthcare.
Oh, healthcare. Yes.
Sam, healthcare. What the fuck are you talking about? That's also, you know, that's only for the rich, Sam. What the hell are you talking about, man? Listen, the GOP policy right now is that if you show up to an ER and you're dying, and if you can't prove that you're a citizen,
we let you die.
Well, actually, as a matter of fact, we don't want other people to see you. We'll roll you out to the dumpster and we'll just put you right in there for you to die. And that's it. You know, that way, you know, the other people don't get to see your carcass.
Yes, because we can't leave that out. Yeah.
No. Can't bother the other people, you know.
But yeah, I don't know. And the thing is, like, I promise I'll move on shortly, but people, even the people who are like, I don't want to spend all this money dealing with like cleaning up the homeless camps and all this stuff. If you do the math, or they say, I don't want to give them a house, that's expensive. It's less expensive than what we're doing now.
Right.
Like the preventative stuff costs less than dealing with the problem after it exists. You know, even if it seems like, oh, you're giving them a free house, why don't I get a free house? You know, whatever. You know, it's like, you know, and
universal basic stuff is so many people are so against it. And it's like one of the things is like most of the universal basic stuff. You know, Puerto Rico, there is a lot of public housing and a lot of people do live in public housing. OK, you know, Puerto Rico has a lot of people that are in the lower end of the income spectrum. That's just that's just a reality. But, you know, well, why do they get a free house? Look, the free houses are not bad. OK, they're decent. OK, but the reality is that if you can actually afford a house, you probably want to buy something else that isn't really the public house. But right. At the same time, you know, you want to give those people at a basic house something that is decent, clean, good, safe.
Right.
OK, you know, it's not a tent full of holes. You want to give something that's basic but good. And these people complaining about, well, why don't I get a free house? Well, honestly, if you're making more money, you probably don't want the basic house. Okay, you and I'm like, why the hell is it so bad that in a nation and so much of the world that is so rich, it's such a fucking problem to give those in the lower part of the income spectrum the basics to live instead of then going and complaining, oh my God, look at those homeless people over there, they're driving me crazy. And I'm like, well, you want to complain about them, but then at the same time, you don't want them to get the basic shit. We can decide what the fuck you want, asshole.
Yeah, anyway, I mean, let's be clear. It's a hard problem. It's not like there's a magical solution.
It is a very hard problem.
But just
making it a criminal and illegal isn't the fucking solution.
Right. Okay. Normally I try to do two movies, but I talked about the other thing. So I'm back to never catching up unless I do two movies a week. But
we will save Spider-Verse. Next week we will get back to two. Well, even as a matter of fact, I'll even let you next week. We'll go to three.
Ooh, three. Oh,
yeah.
Amazing. You know, when one of these days when you're out, maybe I'll just do an all movies episode.
Ah, just do the all movie bunch. Review.
But
here's the thing.
But the problem is I like bouncing them off you because you have an opinion on them too. Me just saying thumbs up, thumbs down, thumbs sideways. I mean, I could go through the whole damn list in 10 minutes.
Well, you can I may be too sick to do one soon. Okay. Not sick, but convalescing. You can bring back ChatGPT to see what he thinks about the movies. You know, the most agreeable idiot in history, you know, let him come in and like, and just... nicely agree to everything.
Yeah, no, we'll get to working on that. No, if I do three next week, the three will be Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse from 2023, The Bridge on the River Kwai from 1957, and Hairspray from 1988. So,
okay,
that would be the, but let's take a break and then we'll actually talk about the news of the week. So back after this.
I want to be on top of the tree. I want to be on the floor when I fall off the tree.
Okay, we're back already. That was the short one.
Oh, awesome.
I think Alex made that recording of me in the car once. I don't know. It's many years old at this point. He had this little app that you can record like that and then add various vocal elements and all kinds of things and distort it in various ways. This is the undistorted version. There are some, you know, maybe we'll get one of the distorted versions one time, right, where it's like a robot voice or something. Yeah. That'd be cool, right, Yvonne?
That'd be awesome.
Yes. Okay, so where shall we start, Yvonne? We've had, like, you know, stuff, I guess.
The shutdown.
Oh, the shutdown, right. Yes, yes, we did have that. So we are shut down. I mentioned I was worried that that would impact my travels, but it did not. What do you got? Like, you know, there seems to be much less concern about this shutdown than the last few times we had shutdown drama.
Well, let's be clear about this. At this point right now, shutting down the government to me seems it seems like a good idea. Can I be honest? With the federal government that we have, when it seems that for the most part, acting against against its citizens and the world, why the fuck do I want it open right now? I mean, how is that helping us in any way, shape, or form?
Well, at least theoretically, there are a lot of services that help people potentially that will go away or be delayed or whatever.
Listen, we're getting paid Social Security, okay? It's not going away. It's not like Medicare and Medicaid benefits right now are being stopped, okay? Now, if you need a new enrollment or you need to change your Social Security or something, yes, that is a problem. But like I said, this government spends every fucking day thinking of ways to fuck us. Every goddamn waking moment, everything that comes out from them is, hey, we figured out a new way to screw you. I mean, literally, Trump posted some AI video showing him as the, whatchamacallit,
the Grim Reaper.
Reaper with all his accomplices going after America. What the, I mean, who wants this government open? Me, right now, I am like, fuck this shit. Keep it closed as long as possible so they can stop fucking with us.
Well, I'll say the thing is, though, and this is one of the reasons Schumer didn't allow this to happen back at the beginning of the year, was this offers the opportunity for the Trump administration to effectively change the facts on the ground to permanently shut down even more stuff.
Listen, here's the thing.
I mean, they were doing it anyway.
Exactly. Like, what are you talking about? Like what? Like it was stopping them while it was open? They don't care. And so, look, one thing about this is public opinion is totally running against the Republicans about this. They are not winning. Even though they've tried
to be clear, when you look at the polls on this, the biggest category is we blame everybody. Then the
The biggest category is not blame everybody. Now, two very different things, because you've got a big block of the country that we've discussed this before
that have no idea,
has no clue. So you can't count those people in. The only people you could really look at are the ones that are looking at it and say, hey, who are you blaming? And if you take that group, almost north of 65% blame the Republicans. So I cannot go and like think about the fucking people that basically and blissfully have their head in the sand and have no idea what the hell is going on. By the way, and which is by the way, quite a large number of people.
So I'm looking for those numbers because I remember seeing who the numbers, I don't know. Like, I thought the numbers for people who had an opinion were actually bigger than I expected. And I remember
it was
that.
It was like 52, 30 something. And like 20-some-odd percent had no clue.
I'm pulling it up right now. Interesting. They didn't give an option for both in this poll. I'm looking at the Washington Post poll. The biggest number was 47% Trump. The second biggest was 30% Democrats, and then it was 23% not sure. So not sure was actually the smallest.
But you see, the thing is that when you look at when you take out the not sure, when you look at that group, because that's the group that's actually paying attention. Okay.
Well, yeah, but not sure was actually relatively small. So even without that, it's 50-30, you know. So
no, but what I say, it's bad enough either way. But I'm saying the group that's looking at it, the vast majority of it, blames the Republicans.
Yes, and that's clear. Regardless, it's almost 50% even with the not sure's in the mix.
Let's see, it's
the same one. Washington Post is the only real one. Here we go. Let's see, did we have, yeah, like not sure is the middle category. They didn't offer a both, which is interesting. If they had offered a both, I suspect a significant chunk would have gone to both. But, you know, okay, we got but regardless, they are getting the blame for the moment, which is interesting because if you listen to press reports on this, like I've listened to the TV news talking heads and a few other folks, there was most of the narrative has been around how the Republicans seem to be doing better on messaging. The poll does not match that.
No, it doesn't. But that's, you know what? It's this whole thing, how we live in all these people and you know, we follow the pundits in the world that they live in, right? Okay. Whereas, oh yeah, they've got the messaging, and even like, you know, look, which is why even some of the people that are inside, some people, the Democratic strategists, complaining, why are they not only fighting about this and not everything else? And I'm like, Jesus Christ, look. In a world where messaging is so difficult, either you stick doing this very simple and binary, okay, or it risks being this wonk debate that 90%+ of the people don't fucking pay attention to.
Well,
because the details just get lost.
And especially here, we're talking a budgetary debate. We're talking about things where some of the issues that people are talking about most are, you know, undoing some changes to the rules about tax credits that happened in the big, beautiful bill a few months ago.
Right.
You know, and or rescissions. Like, ask a random person on the street, what the hell is a rescission? Yeah, come on. You know, this is not going to be, and I think this is absolutely one of those cases where, I looked at the breakdown. I have the breakdown up now. We mentioned the overall numbers. Overall was 47% blame Republicans, 30% blame Democrats, 23% unsure. But if you break it up, you know, among Republicans, 67% Democrat blame the Democrats. Among Democrats, 87% blame the Republicans.
But you see that even the Republicans, you know, are not, I mean,
are down a little bit. Down a little.
Yeah.
But and their number that grows is the not sure, really. 8% of Republicans blame Republicans. So that's, you know, not bad. But the independent group, though, it's 50-22 blaming the Republicans.
It's overwhelming.
It's overwhelming among the independents.
How can Trump go around and literally proclaim himself dictator? Because in that one video that he showed, he basically was saying how Congress is irrelevant. I rule everything. He said that, right? And so you want to turn around and blame the Democrats for it being shutting down when you are just claiming that you run everything. Dude, Okay, decide. Okay, which one are you?
They do this all the time, though. Like, you know, Biden, you know, has lost his mind and is completely ineffective. Oh, but oh, he's so dangerous. You can't let him be in charge. You know, this sort of dual messaging, where on the one hand something is irrelevant, but on the other hand it's incredibly dangerous, is right. Commonplace.
Yeah. I get that. But it's very difficult when you've been hammering to people how you are have control of everything and have everything in the palm of your hand, and then try to claim yourself helpless to the Democrats is very difficult. You know, once you've been pounding that message for I don't know how long, very difficult to do. Okay.
Well, and so let's move to where we think this is going. So
I think we are right looking now at the longest shutdown we've ever had. I really do at this point.
The record right now was in Trump's first administration. It was 35 days.
This is going to go longer.
Right now there's no motion on any side to do anything. Like,
no.
Everybody's sort of digging in their heels, and a lot of people. And look, there are folks in the Republican coalition who agree with what you said at the beginning. With, well, we like it shut down. Let's just leave it. You know, this proves what do we really need and what do we not need. And the president actually has a lot of authority to declare that certain things are needed and have to continue. You know, the counter argument is, you know, do we really want to let Donald Trump be the one deciding that? But as you said, he's been deciding that anyway.
Right.
Last time, the 35 day, I was reminded of this. I haven't double checked it. But the 35 day shutdown, if you remember, it ended when the Democrats retook the House. Right at the end of the term. So the stalemate did not resolve itself by the two sides coming to a better deal whatever. Agreement. There was actually a change in power that enabled them to do something that they would not do earlier. Now, at this point, we're
a year away.
Yeah, we're more than a year away from the election and add a couple months before they actually take power.
Listen, but this is one thing where critical services are continuing, but problems will pile up. I realize that a lot of things are going to pile up. Like, as I mentioned, for example, hey, if you just turn 65, you won't apply for Social Security. That gets problematic right now. You can't go to an office. You can't make changes. You can't get somebody died. You can't register that. They're talking about flood insurance, for example, how right now you can't obtain it. You can't get it's complicated. It's so many different things and processes. I think you can't even apply for passports right now, for example. You can't even get passports. There are so many things that start getting complicated they start piling up. At some point, I'm assuming something's going to happen, because here's the thing. I don't think that a large group of Republicans really wanted to take away health care from a large part of their constituents either. They're just right now being jerk-offs to be jerk-offs.
Or triple the prices and things like that are happening.
Exactly.
In terms of
they didn't really
premiums.
Want this. Okay. Yeah. They didn't want this. Okay. So I think that right now, they're being stubborn just to show spine, but at some point they're going to want to do something too, because they don't want to fuck their constituents that badly as much as they try to sometimes, but they don't want to do it so evidently.
They still don't want to cross Donald Trump. Nobody wants to be the first one to cross Donald Trump. Right.
Right.
And now, even as is, like, we had a couple Democrats in the Senate crossover, Fetterman, and I forget who the other one was.
Look, don't know what the hell, but listen, I don't want to count anything about what the hell's going on in Fetterman's brain at this moment, given everything we've heard around his staff, how he seems to be basically losing his marbles Okay. So I don't know. I discount that. Other people I'll consider, but I don't consider like saying, oh, well, Fetterman decided to do this as something indicative of anything at this point.
Right. So I'm just checking. The Democrats that voted for it were John Fetterman, Catherine Angus Cortez King. Masto from Nevada, and Angus King, who's technically an independent, but who caucuses with the Democrat. Those were the three.
Right. That's it. Yeah.
And so you need a few more, like, to reach the threshold.
You need quite a
so
few more.
So I don't, somewhere around that ballpark. You need 60 votes. So you already have three Republicans plus those three, that's six. You need four more. But I don't know. I don't know who's going to get weak in the knees first. I think it depends a lot on the specifics of, like, what pain does end up accumulating in the way you've mentioned, and who is most sensitive to that pain, what states is it affecting, all that kind of stuff. You also honestly have to not discount the possibility at this point of Donald Trump just reopening whatever he feels like, regardless of the rules. Say, oh, this particular thing is causing pain? Okay, executive order reopening that. And essentially leaving it officially shut down indefinitely, but turning things on one by one as they feel like they cause pain to the Republicans.
But, that is obviously a possibility. And given where SCOTUS is right now, that basically has decided that we are a monarchy at this point. I'm like, I'm not holding my breath about them, doing anything to push back on this administration.
Right. So if I had to bet, I think you're right. This probably will go past 35 days. And I don't know. Like, I would not be surprised by any of the three options we talked about. Democrats capitulating, Republicans capitulating, Donald Trump just pushing through and not giving a damn about it at all.
Or just Donald Trump changing his mind, which has happened before. And by the way, he changed his mind and all of a sudden made it sold everybody. Like, he made a great deal and, like, convinced everybody that it was like he was right. This is what he wanted all along.
Oh, yes. Yes, now that you mention it, I mean, that I would have fit that into the Republicans capitulate category, but
no,
you're absolutely
this
right.
Is not capitulating. This is him saying, I made a great deal, and it's like what I wanted all along, and, finally, I got the Democrats to do what I wanted, and so therefore, here we have this great deal, even though what he's doing is just what the Democrats wanted, and he will sell it like it was his deal.
Yes. This is his genius. I mean... in so many ways, he's a moron, but this is his genius.
That is his superpower. Yes, that is totally his absolute superpower and genius. That he will completely change his mind on something, and then tell everybody it was his idea, and then convince everybody it's such a great deal that he negotiated. Yes.
Yes, even though he's actually just giving the other side exactly what they wanted.
Yes, yeah. Taking the complete other side of what he wanted like 30 days before.
Well,
yes.
Well, this ties into the stuff we've talked about happening again and again on tariffs, with other countries promising to do what they already did and getting credit for it as the massive new deal that was Donald Trump forced through because of the tariffs.
That's right.
Okay.
You forgot that scenario, huh?
I mean, well, I like I said, I was counting it as Republicans capitulate, but it gets spun in a way that's not, Well, it is, but it's not.
It is, but it isn't. Because if you make everybody else believe, and if your people believe that it's you made a deal and it's not seen, what scenario is the other guy's capitulated and everybody sees you're a loser? The other one is... You make it seem like you won, even though you lost, and all your constituents believe you won.
Well, yeah, this is. I mean, I'm having flashbacks to the Mueller report. No obstruction, no collusion.
Exactly.
That's what Barr said. Like, and for like the 2 weeks before he released the actual report. So that's what stuck in everybody's head. No obstruction, no collusion.
Right.
Even though the actual report showed lots of obstruction and lots of collusion.
Exactly right.
It doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter. I came in last place. I won. You walk up to the podium. By the way, Donald Trump has done this kind of like literally in even before he was president. Okay. I mean, David Tepper, I think, is the one that said this, that he showed up to fundraising events, okay, to charitable events where he had not donated a single dime. And he showed up there like he was some major contributor that helped get this thing over the top, blah, 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 showed up there, whatever, and he had not given a dime.
Right. Okay. Let's take a break. And when we come back, I'll pick the topic for the rest of the time. And I will start with the speech from the generals and then move on to going along with what we've just been talking about, sort of Donald Trump's mental state and stuff. Anyway. Yes. Okay, here we go. We'll be back after this.
AlexandTheWeb.com, being Alex and Dad. Gaming videos and more from Alex. Elementary school by day, YouTube by night, AlexandTheWeb.com. AlexandTheWeb is AlexandTheWeb, and .com is period and then com.
He just posted a new video like a few weeks ago, by the way. Like he's down. He's only posting like a few a year now. And there's still ones that he originally recorded when he was 7 years old. He's now 16, by the way. But there's a new video out. So check it out.
Hey, Sam, before we go into the speech to the generals, just a brief mention.
Yes.
What about that coin, huh?
Oh, yes. Well, you know, when they first mentioned the coin with Donald Trump's name on it, I got excited for a second because maybe it was minting the coin.
Oh, the super coin.
You know, the super coin. And, you know, I would almost accept a Donald Trump coin if they actually did the super coin idea, because, like, it's just so disruptive and cool an idea. But, you know, no, it's a $1 commemorative coin, apparently.
So I did read, and apparently the law is that you can't have a coin of somebody either unless they are
a living
dead.
Person.
Okay.
Yes.
So here's the deal. I'm willing.
That has been the law for like 140 years or something.
So here's the deal I propose. I'm good with a coin if you're promising me that he's going to die like tonight or something. We can go ahead with. Listen, if you promise
You'll
me
that
he's
going to
be dead by Monday, go ahead, make the coin. No problem. Make the coin. I'm good. Yeah. that's a trade I'm willing to make right now. Yes.
Yeah. So, but like, honestly, just
dead
talking
by
about
natural
that,
causes, by the way. Okay. That's what I'm saying.
Yes. Yeah.
He has a heart attack or something. I mean, the cholesterol can't be helped. You know, those kinds of things.
You are not calling for anything that would necessitate a Secret Service visit.
No. I'm just, if that, I mean, they're planning to mint the coin because they think they're minting the coin because they think he's going to be dead soon. He's seriously ill. We don't know. That's why they're planning for the coin, Sam. That's the new speculation, since apparently he's not posting. I heard again that he's been like a little bit like
he's
on the quiet
side. He's been
missing
for a couple days again. Yeah. We'll get to that in a second. But yeah, no.
He's getting one of those you remember the artificial heart guy, it was his name. But he's getting an artificial heart.
Dick Cheney.
Well, Dick Cheney got one, right? Yeah.
Well, he didn't get an artificial heart, but he had like a
this ventricular assist it's called. Yeah. It's basically an artificial heart, basically, because it's doing most of the work.
Anyway, just to finish up the coin thing, It is absolutely true that there is a law that says you cannot have a living person on a coin, and they are apparently 90% of the way through the planning process to release a coin with Donald Trump's face on it. Absent your scenario, this is a clear violation of the law, but so is, you know, 80% of the stuff the Trump administration has been doing. And, you know, no one, it is what it is. Because, like, the mechanisms aren't in place to effectively actually stop a rogue president who just says, I don't give a fuck. I'm going to do what I want to do.
Yeah.
Which is unfortunate. Or at least, I shouldn't say the mechanisms don't exist. The mechanisms
are... They exist, but nobody wants to use them. The Republicans control Congress, and they basically have said, he can be lawless. We're good.
And you've got a Supreme Court that is very sympathetic to the idea that the president can do anything they want. And so between these
things... You got the two branches that are supposed to do oversight, basically abdicating their role.
I mean, the lower courts have been repeatedly, going against Donald Trump over and over and over again on many issues. But there's just no level of confidence that when it finally gets to SCOTUS, SCOTUS won't just say, okay, fine, you can do that.
Yeah, he can do whatever you want.
And Donald Trump has taken the position that until SCOTUS says no, he's pretty much going to keep going.
Yep. Yep.
And honestly, we still have that question. If SCOTUS absolutely says no to something that he cares about, what happens? I mean, we actually had that example from the Garcia in El Salvador. So the Supreme Court actually told him, get him home right away. And
he delayed it, but he finally did it, is the thing. That even though he dragged his feet, they wound up doing it. So.
Yes. Although, yeah,
They did drag their feet, but they wound up doing it at the end. So.
So far, when push has come to shove in the end, Donald Trump and his administration have always backed down from the ultimate confrontations. And not only that, like we've talked about Taco with the tariffs, whenever something seems to be getting unpopular, he has backed off as well, Because in the end, he wants to be loved and he wants people to be like excited about it it seems his people hide a lot of things from him.
The generals laugh and love him when he was given the speech.
Yeah, let's move on to the generals.
They love. OK, so my key question, did the generals, clap and love when he was given the speech?
Well, first of all, let's just level set this with the protocol that generals and other military folks are supposed to follow anyway, is that they are non-political, and so they shouldn't clap at something.
I know, but he was expecting that, right?
He specifically said at the beginning, I know you're not supposed to, but feel free to clap if you want to, and stuff like that. And no, nobody clapped. Nobody clapped, nobody hooted and hollered. He was giving, and this is both Hegseth and Trump were hoping for some positive reactions. They got the generals and admirals basically sitting on their hands.
Which is what they should be doing, which I'm proud of them for doing so, by the way.
Which is what they should be doing. And just to be clear, this type of audience, like bring in all the generals that exist into one room, has not happened.
Doesn't happen.
But speaking more generally in front of military audiences, the military audiences can get animated and hoop and holler and stuff when presidents give speeches, and the speeches are wholeheartedly like, hey, we're going to support the troops. We're doing a good effort. America is great, blah, blah, blah. It's things that are somewhat universal where they're just, they're visiting troops in Afghanistan and they're talking about supporting the effort and how important the work they do is and stuff like that. Okay. In those cases, the military is fully allowed to clap and express appreciation, all of that kind of stuff. But what Donald Trump and Pete Hegseth are doing here are, and they really were two different. I don't want to lump them in together because they had different purposes and were doing different things. But they're fundamentally, especially the Donald Trump speech, it's like 100, well, especially, they were both. They were both 100% political issues that are controversial in politics today, pushing their view, talking about Democrats evil, et cetera, et cetera. This is exactly the kind of thing where protocol says the military should sit on their hands, and they did. And a lot of the, you know, it took a few hours for the feedback to start coming in, sort of anonymous generals talking to reporters and such. The feedback is universally that, like, the vast majority of people in that audience were disturbed by the speeches and upset by the speeches, not support. I mean, obviously there's some proportion that would be supportive, but the vast majority were not. They were upset by this. They were like, this is not the kinds of conversations we should be having. They didn't like being lectured by Hegseth on what it means to be a warrior. The feedback on Donald Trump was things like, after the first five minutes, I stopped taking notes because it was just incoherent and rambling and it made no sense.
Standard Trump speech.
The Hegseth stuff was all anti-woke, you know, anti-trans, anti-woman. Like, we want to restore and pro-war crimes, I guess. Like,
pro-war crimes. That was very clear. Yes.
Yeah, it's like, we don't want any of these rules that tell you how to behave. We just want you to kill people. Kill people and break things, you know?
Hegseth is deranged. I've never heard anybody in military leadership as an adult, as I remember, talk to generals like this.
And even if you actually hear actual military people talking about their jobs, like, they don't, with very few exceptions that probably should be run out on a rail, they don't talk about the kill people and break things with pride. They recognize that it's part of their profession as a necessity, but it's all about professionalism and being able to do what's necessary and not what's more than necessary. And we want to use our power to achieve the political goals, but we want to do so carefully. They really care about things like rules of engagement and trying to avoid the civilian casualties when possible. Now, they could be a lot more careful than they are. You know, there have been a lot of unnecessary deaths in U.S. military engagements. I mean, we don't quite reach Israeli levels.
But the one thing is that the primary mission is you know, and I see this in a lot of places, is defending the country. Okay,
well, and that's very specifically, the primary mission. I've seen a number of retired folks commenting. The oath is to support the Constitution.
Constitution, exactly, yes.
And these fucking jokers are undermining it.
Right.
You know, and so they are not happy about this. I've even started to see some things on TikTok about, like, you know, military folks starting to talk about the possibility of a military coup at some point. Now, I think this is not a likely scenario, but even the fact that you've got a few people sort of starting to murmur about those kinds of options indicate how much these people actually feel disrespected by this nonsense.
That's the thing. I think that's the key thing. That whole event was totally disrespectful to the entire military leadership of the United States. That's the one thing that it was.
Everything from the call everybody in for something that could have been a memo to the things you're actually saying. I mean, and the fact that part of Donald Trump's speech involved, you know, oh, and prepare to use the American cities as training grounds. We're going to, you know, be prepared for that. And if you don't like it, resign now. You know, and this is, you know, like I said, the culture in the military for many, many decades now is we are a professional organization. We live by standards. We're not just thugs that go out and kill people. You know, yes, of course, it's the military. They kill people. They break things. Yes, that's part of what they do. But the whole ethos is around service and professionalism and doing things by the rules and all of this kind of stuff and honor. And this is not respecting any of that.
No.
And part of it, of course, is like, you know, Trump and Hegseth don't actually think any of what I just mentioned is valuable at all.
By the way, and I'm pretty confident that most of those guys that got to be general had zero respect for, even though Hegseth was in the military. I wasn't sure he was. When I read his record.
He was.
He was in the military, but he wasn't exactly, he didn't really make it that far. And it's something that I read some people mentioning. It's, this is how far a mediocre guy gets in the military, you know? That was the thinking that I heard around some people. And so these guys, knowing when that's the mindset of these guys and they realize that they got the mediocre guy who you basically like, you know, the reason he's not there is because he was mediocre and now is the head of them. You know, I know that I've been in those kind of situations in corporate when that happens. Let me tell you something. The rest of the people that were there looking at this guy, they're all like, this fucking loser. Is the only thing, this is a different
scenario, by the way, than a civilian who's never been in the military at all, but has other experience.
Exactly. Yes. Absolutely.
Yeah. This is worse.
This is way worse.
And he's coming in and lecturing them, and he's, you know, when they know
he was mediocre.
You know, and a lot of these things, like the administration has been so hostile to like women in the military at all, for instance, let alone trans people. That they've been absolutely hostile to, but women more generally.
Oh my God.
Now, and look, there is still, you know, the military hadn't fully succeeded in transforming to be fully open to women in all places anyway, but it's moved on quite a bit from where it was 20, 25 years ago. Like there were women in significant command positions. There are women in various combat positions celebrated. The culture has moved on. The culture, you know, it is certainly not perfect, but they're trying to drag it back 40 years, you know, and, mm-hmm. and with all of the, or more, and with all of this kind of stuff, when you don't, let's say you did legitimately want to change the culture. This is not the way you do it successfully.
No, not at all.
You know, I mean, just like we're talking about, you know, first the military integrated, you know, integrated, not non-white people into the military. Then they started accepting women in non-combat roles and eventually some combat roles and trans people more recently and gay people more recently, you know, and, you know, this has happened over the course of quite a few years and it hasn't been easy. The cultural change has been slow and it is imperfect and it hadn't finished yet, but it had gotten to the point where you can't just snap your fingers and undo it. And, you know, what they're doing, on the one hand, you know, I hate what they're trying to do, but at the same time, I'm glad they're as bad at it as they are, you know, because it makes it more likely that it will be easier to reverse some of this stuff once they're gone. So I don't know. I have some more to talk about Donald Trump specifically. Any more about these speeches before I...
No.
Move on. Okay.
Oh, can I say one thing?
Wait. Yeah, go ahead.
Yes. Let's just, you're going to talk about Donald Trump, you said? Oh, yeah. Can I? My regular reminder: fuck Donald Trump.
Oh, okay. Yes.
Yeah, I just wanted to make sure that was clear in the program. I don't want to forget to be, you know.
Of course not. No. Can't forget that. No. So look, we've talked about Trump's health before. We've talked about Trump's mental health before. I think it's time to do so again. I mentioned how, like, generals were off the record quoted as saying they stopped taking notes because it made no sense and it was just rambling and going nowhere. If you listened to Donald Trump's speech here, and I did not listen to a lot of it. I listened to clips.
I listened to none of it. I just read what it is. I like I said before, I have a visceral problem
to
with hearing his voice. And yes. I want to like fucking throw shit at it or something. So I have to turn it off.
So let me start with, first of all, yes, it was rambling and incoherent. He's often rambling and incoherent, but it does seem like it's getting worse. But also, he just physically sounded like shit again. Like, you remember a few weeks ago, we were all talking about, oh, he's been missing for a week. Where'd he go? Blah, blah, blah. Something clearly happened. And then he showed up again. And fine, but he once again sounds like shit. Like his very, very low energy. His voice was a monotone most of the time. It was somewhat gravelly. He did not sound well. And so the speculation's not gonna go away. I mean, I still think, like, more so than anything else, like, if something really acute happens, I still believe we will hear about that relatively quickly. Like, if something
right,
if there's a
no, no, like, no way, they will hide it as much as possible.
They will absolutely hide as much as possible. But what I mean by something really acute is, like, if it's serious enough, he has to get rushed to the hospital. Like, we will know about that. They will not be able to hide it.
I think that they are geared up to even hide that. Because I think the speculation is that last time he had to have some kind of procedure, which is why he was like really
right.
like.
But they might have been able to do it at the White House.
Yeah, but I think that they bulked up what they could do at the White House precisely so they can hide whatever the fuck is going on with this guy. So if he has something major, that they could do it and hide it as much as possible. I've never seen a president, you know, we've had presidents where the health condition or whatever, they tried to hide it. Sam, this guy's been wearing makeup to hide shit, okay?
Well, he's been wearing makeup for decades.
But he's been wearing makeup to also hide now, like,
yes,
like
I know, actual, when he put the stuff on his hands and things
yeah,
like that.
Yeah, he's been hiding medical, you know, things that are actual physical ailments. He was wearing makeup because he likes to look orange for some fucking reason. I'm talking about wearing makeup in order to hide signs of some physical issues, okay?
So what I was saying, though, is I think, like, I hear what you're saying. I still think if there was something really acute, they would be incapable of hiding it for very long. But I think what we're seeing is just regular, gradual decline associated with aging, both on his mental state and on his physical state. And it's not a dramatic, like, one day he's like this, the next day he's so much worse, but it's just gradual decline, and he's got better days and he's got worse days, and, you know, and that's going to continue to happen. But I also feel like I think we're seeing increasing evidence of him being significantly checked out a lot of the time. Mm-hmm. In terms of, you know, like, look, You talked about him posting the Grim Reaper meme. A few days earlier, he posted this medbed thing.
That's right.
So for those who don't know or didn't follow this, first of all, I didn't know this, but apparently this is an ongoing conspiracy theory on the right, that the government secretly has developed medbeds using alien technology over the last couple of decades. And these are basically beds that you can put a person in and they will heal everything. They will, okay, by like, the way, any this, ailment this, this, you
this
ha-
is,
may have.
Okay, as far as I can tell, these people watched the movie Elysium too many times, and you need to add that to your list if it's not on there. Okay, all right. This seems to be Elysium, to give you the gist. The main thing is a movie in a future where Earth is like so contaminated that people are living on space stations, and like the president and like all those people are living there, and the space stations have these med beds where people can get instantly healed of any condition, but only the elite people, the chosen people, the beds actually DNA scan you. And so they won't give you, if you're not a citizen, they won't give you the healing stuff. Okay.
Okay. So I think
these assholes basically watch that movie too many times.
So yes, the idea is it can heal anything, like from you've got a cold,
cancer.
Somebody chopped off your arm, it will regrow it,
and even
de-aging. Like, yeah. Oh, you don't like being in your 50s anymore? Okay, try out your 20s again. You know, whatever. But and part of the conspiracy, of course, is the government has this but is hiding it from people. So Donald Trump posted an AI-generated fake newscast of somebody talking about the new initiative that Donald Trump was announcing that included video of a fake Donald Trump talking about how they were starting to roll out the MedBed program and it would be available to people, and they're, you know, it wasn't going to be available to everybody all at once, but they were going to, you know, there's a sign up and there's a way and blah, blah, blah. And he just posted it. Like, it's like, okay. And the question is, did he see this online and just think, oh, this is cool? And it's like, oh, I don't remember announcing this, but okay, I guess I did repost or what? You know, and they did take it down a few hours later. Like, it was taken down.
Oh, they did take it down.
Which is apparently relatively rare for Donald Trump to take down his social media posts, but they did remove this one after a little while. And just generally speaking, I mean, his unhinged things that he posts on Truth Social seemingly get more unhinged and more unrelated to reality.
Nuts.
Which is hard because they were already bad.
Right, but they have, yes, it has escalated in insanity. I mean, it's like, I mean, I am like right now, I realize that I was so busy the last few days that I stopped really reading a lot of media because of how much I, you know, actually I was busy and I was having a good time because I realized that my favorite part of this job is actually visiting customers. Okay. I've known that before.
Okay.
And I'm like, damn it. I'm like over there. Honestly, I was having a great time. So I wasn't reading any of this. And all of a sudden, after I got busy late yesterday, I started catching up on some of this shit and I opened it. And I'm like looking at some of these posts and some of the posts that he was posting. I don't know, a few of the another unhinged stuff. And I'm like, what in fucking hell? They are worse.
Yes. And I think there's a lot of, well, here's the one quote from a couple of days ago. And of course, you'll say like it was a mistake, whatever. But Representative Dean from Pennsylvania confronted Johnson, Speaker Johnson, in the hallways at the Capitol. And this got caught on camera. And she started out by saying, the president is unhinged. He is unwell. And he's pleading for Johnson to like do something about this. Johnson's answer, his immediate answer before he moved on to other things was, a lot of folks on your side are too. Too.
Are too.
You know, and yes, look, I mean, some people have started talking about, like, Pritzker's calling for the 25th Amendment. Of course, no one's going to listen to Pritzker, right? You know, this is, like, the 25th Amendment has to be the vice president and a majority of the cabinet. And by the way, even after they declare it, the president has to submit a letter to Congress. The president has, if the president submits a letter to Congress saying, no, never mind, I'm fine, then Congress has to weigh in and it has to be a 2/3 majority So, like, the 25th Amendment is really, really hard, you know?
I mean, it's basically about as hard, close to as hard as impeachment, basically.
Yeah, and basically, like, if the president himself disagrees, it's impossible. Like, for all intents and purposes, it's impossible. Like, it's a workable mechanism if the president is in a coma, okay?
Right.
But if the president is around and disagrees and doesn't think it, or if the president agrees, like, you know, we've had a number of occasions now where the president's going into surgery and they sign a letter themselves invoking the 25th to hand over power while they're in surgery, you know, that kind of thing. But it is not a workable mechanism in a situation where the president actively does not agree with being removed. You know, it just isn't. So anybody,
I mean,
talking
it is
about
if everybody,
that,
if Congress, and it's evident to everybody.
If everyone agreed.
If everyone agrees, but given the current
I have heard some conspiracy theory folks say, well, this is the plan all along, is to get Vance to take over. And so, of course, they're going to pull the trigger at some point. I don't buy it. Like, if the opportunity arises, do I think Vance would, you know,
Vance is a grifter, of course. I mean, if the opportunity arises, say, like you said, if he's in a coma, fuck, man, Vance is getting that shit signed, like, yesterday, okay?
Right. But yeah, no, I think a far more likely scenario is like what you were, they'll hide it. They'll hide it. I mean, they'll trot him out when they need to, and the rest of the government will work around him. I think we've got increasing evidence at this point that that's what's happening anyway, that he's not really engaged, except every once in a while on an issue that he really wants to be. I mean, hell, to some degree, this was true even in his first term, but I think it's much more so true now. There are a couple of issues where he's engaged and cares, but for everything else, the people around him are running things, you know, and depending on the subject matter, it's a different person. Like on anything immigration, it's Miller, you know, and there may be other people in other areas, whatever, but he's basically, you know, that they're deciding on the policy. They're deciding what to do. One of the things that was reported out of the meeting that he had with the Democratic leaders over the shutdown last week was that they went to him and were like, look, there are all these things that are going to happen with healthcare. People's premiums are going to go up. People are going to be kicked off. It's, you know, result of the big, beautiful bill. And we want to make sure that doesn't happen. And then apparently his response was, I've never heard any of that. That can't be true. You know, that's the you know, whatever. And also, by the way, I think this happened after our last show, when he was sending troops into Portland, and he finally talked on the phone to the governor of Oregon, and the governor of Oregon was like, Portland's not like that. There's nothing going on. We don't need you. And he's like, but I saw it on TV, and she's like, but that it's not that it's old stuff, whatever. And he's like, are you telling me that what I see on TV isn't true?
I'm like that general that they saw that put his fans in his face, which I think, you know, basically just channeled all of us.
I mean, because it seems clear, like the Portland thing, there's been other reporting as well.
What's going on in Portland? What the fuck is going on?
The reporting on that seems to be that what actually happened is there was no long-term planning on this. Nobody on his team expected it. He saw a report on Fox News where they mixed in coverage from the year 2000.
What happened years ago. Yeah. In 2000.
Which, by the way, even in 2000, it was one event that happened on one block one time.
In one block.
Where
somebody burnt a car
or something.
Yes.
And so he saw that footage, and then the next morning he started tweeting out or truth socialing out, we're going into Portland with everything. And then after that, his team scrambled to figure out how to actually do it. Now, there are some reports that some of that planning with the team that did not end up happening was they were going to send in the 82nd Airborne. You know, they were like not just like National Guard. They were going to send in like elite troops and all this kind of stuff.
Yes. Okay. Donald Trump is a psychopath. Yes. Bottom line. Yes. After careful analysis of all the information that we've got, Donald Trump is a deluded psychopath. Okay. There you
go. And I think specifically he's had serious mental health issues basically his entire life, but now they are being aggravated by age. They are getting aggravated by age and getting worse and stress. Yeah. So, okay, with that, let's wrap it up. The usual, go to curmudgeons-corner.com and see all our stuff. You can see our archives. You can see all the ways to contact us, transcripts of shows, all kinds of cool stuff. I still have not added a link to TikTok there. So if you want to see TikTok, go there. The most recent thing on there, I need to post more. I'm still way behind. I'm like a month behind. The most recent thing on TikTok is the clip of me talking about the trip I took where, you know, I went on a carnival ride with a date and threw up, and the people below us were screaming in horror as the vomit rained down from above on their heads.
We are so good at setting up Sam on a date. I contributed to setting up Sam on that date. And let's just say that I think it went quite well, honestly. You know, it did.
We had
30 years of stories out of this. Yes, I would say that I proclaim it a success in the end. Even, let's see, it was the vomiting, the horse thing at horses, the horse allergies at the ER. I mean, you know, there was some action going on, enjoyable for Sam. Everything included all in one event, and I'm like, damn it, you know, yes.
Yeah. So anyway, that's the last thing on the TikTok. It is a clip from the show from about a month ago. Anyway, that is that. Importantly, there's a link to our Patreon where you can give us money at various levels. We will mention you on the show. We will ring a bell. We will send you a postcard. We will send you a mug, all that kind of stuff. Or at $2 a month or more, or if you just ask us, we will invite you to Curmudgeon's Corner Slack, where Yvonne and I and a bunch of listeners are chatting throughout the week. So Yvonne...
Fuck.
I caught him by surprise.
Filibuster.
We need a something we shared on the Curmudgeon's Corner Slack and talked about that was so exciting and so interesting that it will compel people to immediately want to join our Slack and get in touch with us to make that happen. So have I filibustered long enough, Yvonne? No?
Oh, yes. Yes. Okay. All right. Story this week under random. QAnon Shaman says he's rightful president, sues Trump for $40 trillion. Okay?
In a rambling complaint.
Yes, of course. In a rambling complaint, Jacob Chansley claims DJs are spies and the NSA stole his work for a Batman movie and more. I mean,
yes.
Damn it. This is so fitting to 2025. And he sued him for $40 trillion.
$40
trillion. Yes.
Yeah.
Get on collecting that moment right away, buddy. There you go.
And now that the med beds are out, you know, he'll be able to enjoy this $40 trillion over many years.
Forever!
Yeah.
There you go.
Okay. With that, let's wrap it up. Thanks, everybody, for joining us. Stay safe. Have a good week, and we will see you again next time. I will be hopefully back in the Seattle area, and Yvonne will hopefully continue to be well enough to participate.
Yes, I hope so.
Okay. Thanks, everybody. Here comes the music. Goodbye.
Bye.
Okay, hitting stop. See you later, Yvonne. Feel better. Rest.
Thank you. Okay, bye.